B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Final hour, Felger and Maz. As I mentioned, we had a special edition of Big Boy Tuesday here, post-draft edition. Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal, a regular Tuesday guest during the football season. And some interesting stuff. One is, he is as in on Mac Jones as anyone as I've heard. And again, he was very high on him going into the draft. So I'm not going to get on him for, you know, shaping a Patriots narrative there after the draft, because he said a lot of the same stuff before they took Mac Jones. But boy, he is all in on Mac Jones. And he does not buy what Mike Lombardi said over the weekend, that Mac Jones is going to sit the first year. Redshirt year, you're not going to see Mac Jones. Nope. Greg Bedard thinks that, Mac Jones is smart enough and is ready enough that he's going to play this year. Just give me Bedard number one here if you could, Jimmy.
I do not. This guy is borderline brilliant. You talk to anybody around Alabama. You talk to Steve Sarkisian, his former offensive coordinator. You talk to Nick Saban. You talk to Bill O'Brien. This guy is a genius. He graduated in 3 years, has his master's degree already. He's brilliant. He is the type of guy who they'll put in a game plan and say, we don't have an answer for this play, and we're not ready to give it. And then the next day he's already caught it and say, well, what are we going to do if we see this in a game? This is like the next level. We talked all last season about how Cam Newton just, at least last year, I don't know about this year with a full offseason, he never gave the Patriots what they needed at the line of scrimmage, pre-snap, post-snap, all that stuff. What's the defense doing, getting us in and out of bad plays, things like that. Cam never demonstrated an ability that he was going to be able to do that. That could change. I don't rule that out. But at some point in time, unless the Patriots are just start out like gangbusters and Cam Newton all of a sudden is much more improved throwing, reading the defenses, knowing the offense, all that stuff, then I think at some point in time, there's a decision is going to have to be made. And if I had to place a bet, I think that Mac Jones plays before the end of the season.
Okay, so again, genius, brilliant, next level. Wow.
He
really?
Watched that film and he got breathless.
Yeah, I will say this for him, though, that at least in Greg's case, he also said the same thing before the draft.
Oh, yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah, so that is consistent. I mean, that is consistent. Now, again, I have my doubts about Jones because I can't help but think he's A.J. McCarron. Like, how can you tell sometimes with Alabama? How can you tell?
Right. He got us into the right play. Well, you could have called any one of three or four things and they were all going to work.
Exactly.
So, but I'll take Greg's word for it. Fine. This is what Mac Jones brings to the table. I'll take it. But, you know, Bedard is really excited about this pick. Give me number three. Listen to some of this stuff. Number three, Jimmy.
I was, Mike. And that the Patriots ended up with Mac Jones, I'm excited. I don't know what they think about internally, but I'm very excited because now upper level echelon passing offense, all that stuff is now back on the table for the Patriots, where it was basically, it went away last year and it was bully ball and it was very rudimentary, the passing game. It's something that you can't win a lot with in the NFL. And you know what I saw from Mac Jones on film, and look, I thought, and I might have said it on this show or on my podcast, but I had the same bias that a lot of people did going into Alabama. I'm like, Mac Jones, big deal. He's probably, Greg McElroy or A.J. McCarron. I mean, I think Tony Maz could win a few games with Alabama's talent around him. And so I went in with that bias, to be honest. But I watched the film, and I was just blown away, you know, not just by his mind, which you can see. And yes, he could throw a lot of balls and know Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and these guys are going to catch the ball and come up with it and that they're going to win a good majority of the time. Absolutely, you can say that. But for me, I was more impressed with his movement in the pocket. He's a big guy.
Hold on one second. You can stop it right there. Okay, so upper echelon passing is now back on the table for the Patriots, says Bedard, with Mac Jones. Blown away by watching him on tape. And now we get to the mobility within the pocket and his footwork. And Greg is going to do what a lot of people have done, which, again, get ready for it. Go ahead, Jimmy, roll the tape. Please. Pick it
his right. Movement in the pocket. He's a big guy. He's a pocket passer, but he moves very light on his feet. And I don't want to invoke, you know, number 12 very many times talking about Mac Jones, because it's not fair to Jones. It's not fair to Brady. But when there are things that he does that you're like, I haven't really seen that very much, outside of Tom Brady. The way how light he is on his feet, how he moves, there's a natural sort of bounce in his step in the pocket that you don't see from a lot of these pocket passers. And I think that's where, because we have seen pocket passers come into this league and they flame out. And it's because they don't know how to move in the pocket. And Jones knows how to manipulate the pocket. He does throw against pressure. He got the crap kicked out of him a couple times in a couple of the games. I know the Georgia game was one of those where I was like, first couple of games I watched, I was like, well, he's not getting touched. You know, I could throw 7-on-7 too. But then you watch like the Georgia game and a couple other games, and he's, you know, they didn't have great pass protection in terms of the running backs, and he's getting hit and he's bouncing right up and he's making really big throws in the face of pressure. I was very impressed. And to me, Mac Jones was clearly the number three quarterback in this class. He was a step above Fields. He was a step above Lance. And to me, he's the perfect Patriot quarterback.
Perfect Patriot quarterback. So Greg Bedard's all in.
He is. He's all in. He loves him.
He invokes Brady. He doesn't want to, but he does it. Moves in the pocket and will evoke some memories of Tom Brady, light on his feet, blown away. Upper echelon passing is now back on the table for the Patriots. Genius, brilliant, next level. Those are the headlines from the big boy. So he's all in on Mac Jones.
He is. And I told you, the comments he made about Jones being able to throw under pressure to me contrasted something that I remembered from a while back. Jimmy found them.
Oh, awesome.
It was Matt Hasselbeck who was on Get Up talking about it. And we have two of them. I don't remember which one it is.
It doesn't matter. So this is before the draft.
This is before the draft. This is all the way back in late March.
Excellent.
Okay, late March. So, Jimmy, let's play the shorter of the two first. That is Hasselbeck on Mac Jones. And again, this was from Get Up on March 25th.
I will say this. The game has changed. Yes, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl, but he came into the league in a different generation. It used to be a cherry on top when the quarterback could run. I believe now it is a prerequisite, if you're going to be drafted in the first round, that the quarterback can be involved in the run game because of what it does in your number count. So I just look at Mac Jones. He's a good prospect, but to be in kind of the elite of the elite, it's not there for me because I think there are athletic deficiencies.
Okay, now that wasn't it.
Yeah, that's fine.
But there's another one there on Mac Jones. With two, I couldn't remember which one it is. So let's try the other one, Jimmy. This one's a little longer. This is Hasselbeck on Jones, too.
It is a freak athlete sport. And the first round is reserved for the guys that are the elite of those freak athletes. And he is not that. And I agree with Mel at the same time in that, look, you make your money in the NFL being able to pass from the pocket. But I do think the game has changed in a way that, being able to run, being able to escape, being able to create, we're seeing so many people do it at a high level that is where this is headed. And I get it. Yes, Breeze, Brady, all those guys having success late in their career, but they've built up this equity of being able to do things pre-snap, being able to get in and out of place. And maybe Mac Jones gets to that point. I think he's a good prospect. I'm just talking about if we're projecting, give me the guy that is checking all the boxes athletically, because I need him to take over game, because that's what the best of the best are being asked to do.
Okay, so again, I must not have pulled it. I'll find it. I remember he said specifically about pressure, and we played those two. Maybe we didn't play it on the show, but I'll find it because okay. I know he said it.
Well, let me tell you, the quarterback has to be involved in the run game. I don't agree with that.
No, I don't either.
I don't. So, like, no, I don't think it. The pro game has definitely gone to the college game, but it's not gone that much. Your quarterback's involved in the running game. If your quarterback blows, like Cam Newton, that's when he's involved in the running game. Now, the escapability part, you've got to have a quarterback that can escape and make plays throwing on the run and scramble plays when you need it on 3rd and 9. Like, that's different. That's different. If you're telling me that that is the model, that you have to be Pat Mahomes or, Aaron Rodgers,
who will do it, unless, of course, there's a trip to the Super Bowl on the line, and then he won't run it. He'll just stand right there and bitch about his coach and the GM and everything else. Sorry, had to take that shot. But, that thing, the escapability, fine. It feels like most guys are doing that, from Josh Allen to Pat Mahomes to you name it. Justin Herbert can run. Like, all these guys are athletic, more athletic than the Bradys of the world. And if Mac Jones doesn't even have that, then that's, let's see that. But don't tell me he's got to be involved in the running game. I don't want my quarterback involved in the running game.
No. And again, the part I was talking about really related mostly to pressure and how he could not react to the pressure well enough, and he wasn't athletic enough to escape it. And so, I'll find it. But to me, I don't care necessarily about the running either. I mean, I want him to move. I don't want him to just stand there and be Bledsoe.
So Bedard also said that in terms of when they go to Mac Jones, it'll be obvious for everyone to see. And I hope it's that simple. But if it's really obvious and really simple, you're 2-6, and now the season's over and it's obvious, that's not what I'm bargaining for. Then they've blown it. They've blown another year. I don't need that. So they're going to be 6-2, but it's going to be obvious. Okay, really? They're going to be 6-2. If you pull Cam Newton, he's won 6 of 8 games.
And people will be pissed in that locker room. I don't see how that can work.
So, I don't think it's going to be simple. If it's simple, it means you blow. And now you've wasted another year. Not good. Not what I'm looking for. Or you say, okay, you have a winning record like the Dolphins last year, and it's time to turn it over to the kid. But then you tell me. You're telling me all 60 guys in that locker room are going to be good with that? And Cam's going to be okay with that? And he's still going to be the good soldier that he's been if you take the job away from him after he's won 6 of 8 games? I don't think that's going to be simple at all. I hate their quarterback room. Never mind. And I don't care how many times Greg or people tell me it's the same offense. You've got to call different plays for Cam Newton. And I'm not just even talking running plays. Cam Newton doesn't see the field great. He doesn't read defenses great. He's not a line of the scrimmage kind of quarterback. Mac Jones, as Greg Bedard would tell me, is. He's a genius, brilliant, upper echelon passings, now back on the table for the Patriots. Well, you're going to call a different set of plays for a guy like that versus Cam Newton.
No question.
I don't care if it's the same terminology or the same plays. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. It's
yes.
A different thing. So Newton doesn't fit. He doesn't fit with Jones. Jones doesn't fit with Newton. I don't think making the transition in the middle of the year is going to be easy unless you absolutely suck and then you've blown another year. So, I just sort of respectfully disagree with some of that commentary. I'll take his word for it. I mean, I hope he's right about Jones. I hope he's an elite passer and a genius and brilliant and next level and great footwork and, blown away by what he can do. I hope that's right. Then start him. Then start him in week one and let's grow with that. I don't think there's any shot at Bill doing that. But if it's, if that's all there, then let's just do that week one. Why don't we? Greg had one more interesting thought about why Bill continues to dance around the Cam Newton thing, why he was so subdued the night they drafted Jones, and why he still continues to play lip service to Newton. There's a thought on that. And then back to your phones on this and our Bruin stuff right after these words.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
You are a sorry liar. You are a sad, sorry liar.
98.5.
Literally pathetic.
The Sports Hub.
Do you feel Belichick was less than enthused at the pick? Do you think he was all in on the player, or was it a little too, need-based for his liking? What do you think?
No, I disagree with that, and I can tell you this, and I think this also goes to what Mike Lombardi was saying about the timeline, and I can't tell you the reasons, I can't tell you the specifics, but I'll just say this. I think there's a concerted effort to continue on what we saw last year about Cam Newton and speaking in a certain way, and look, quite frankly, I don't disagree with it because Belichick is not going to give anybody anything. Mac Jones hadn't even walked in the building yet. They're not going to say he's competing for anything. He has to earn the right to compete and he's not even there. But I do think that the Patriots, for whatever reason, and I don't understand it, I think they are careful with how they deal with Cam Newton, and they don't want to sort of disgruntle him before they have to.
So they're so sensitive to Cam Newton's feelings that they have to tiptoe around it every time they open their mouths. Yet benching him for a rookie is going to be easy. And yeah, I mean to yell at Bedard without him being here, but just follow along with this. This is sort of what I'm talking about. It's not as easy as it appears unless he totally sucks. Then it's obvious. Then that's no problem. But, oh, then you're 1-5 or 2-6 and the season's over. If he's winning and you pull him, but you're worried about saying the wrong thing. You're worried about saying the wrong thing about the effing rookie to upset Cam. How is he going to take it if you actually sit him and take his job away?
It's probably the main reason why it's so problematic that he's back here.
He should not be back here.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I think we're all in agreement on that part of it. The only difference is by then you won't care. Right now they care. Right? You follow me? In other words...
No, but okay, I guess.
Right? So right now you look at it and you say, well, we need him. We need him, so we got to play ball. So they're behaving and they're going along with it, and they say, fine, you know, because Jones isn't going to be ready. And in Bill's mind, he's looking at it the same way. You know, again, you understand his thinking.
Yes.
So Bill looks at it and says, in all probability, this kid's not going to be ready until next year. So you know what? We're going to have to cover our ass with Cam, and we got to be safe with Cam. And then if you get to week 8, Cam sucks and the kid looks good, well, then you change.
And then
you pull the carpet out from under his feet.
You take the risk on losing Newton because you don't need him anymore.
Correct.
Okay, then I'm just curious what happens in the locker room and the guys that he's friends with and all of that. I'm just saying it's just never that easy. Anyway, back to your calls here as promised. This and the Bruins. We've got Ryan in New Hampshire who's waiting patiently today. Thanks for hanging on, Ryan. What do you got?
Hey, I just want to touch on Robert Kraft's comments leading up to the draft about how the Patriots were going to reshape how they've approached the draft in the past. To me, reading between the lines, that meant to me that they were going to draft a quarterback in the first round. I just wanted to hear you guys' thoughts on that.
Look, I mean, we put all these facts into the take slow cooker back at home and put it on low simmer.
The crock pot.
Yeah, the crock pot. The take
crock pot.
The take crock pot. But just, I mean, all these things I'm going to give you are facts, okay? Robert Kraft came out and said, we haven't drafted well recently. He says, I've seen a new approach, though, a new collaborative approach, and I like what I've seen. It's a new approach. They put out the video from the draft room the night of the draft, and Bill is asking around the room how his guys feel about it. And then the day after the draft, or the last day of the draft, Bill's closest confidant, his consigliere, the guy that a lot of people say he just confers with this guy and no one else, retires. So, I don't know, Bedard thinks we're some sort of, like, a-holes to just put those things in a crock pot and let it simmer, but I don't know, you tell me.
Oh, I think they're all connected.
I mean, maybe they are, maybe they're not, but, oh, and they, by the way, reached for a quarterback in the first round on top of it all. So, what? I'm sorry. Like, that's just those things happened. You can say they're all independent coincidence, but maybe not.
Yeah. Look, and I have no doubt. I mean, you know, we may not be that far apart with Greg in that, you know, we have a tendency to sort of turn everything into an apocalyptic event.
No.
And, you know, and they do the opposite. But I just look at the events. And so I don't judge it on the events. I don't think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden, you know, Ernie's being phased out and they're going in a different direction.
I mean, again, you've heard. I mean, I've heard Patriots. Charlie Weiss told me on the record, when we're in a game and Ernie Adams comes onto the headset, we all know we have to shut the F up. And so, like, and you've heard this complaint over the years that Bill just confers with Ernie. It's a forum of two. It's Bill and Ernie. And so Robert says we wanted to be more collaborative. And the day after the draft, Ernie's gone. It could be totally independent. I don't know what happened. I'm just telling you those two things happened.
Yeah, and the fact that Ernie was such a sounding board for Bill might have at some point become a problem. You know, like, I don't think that that is far-fetched. It happens where a guy has his right-hand man, and he basically, you know, excludes everybody else, and all of a sudden you have scouts and evaluators leaving the organization because they say, well, what's the point of speaking up? All Bill does is talk to Ernie. He doesn't take our opinion seriously.
Jay, New Hampshire, you're up next. Hi, Jay.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Two things. If the Capitals and Bruins play, should Trent Frederick play on the fourth line? Just because, a.k.a. Tom Wilson. And the second thing is, back in when Drew Bledsoe was drafted by Bill Parcells, did Bledsoe play
week one
in his rookie year?
Rookie year, week one. Different, though.
Yep, very.
They're coming off of 1-15. Parcells just gets here. He's part of a big rebuild. There's a five-year plan. Bledsoe's just the first pillar of it. And so you take your lumps with the rookie, and you start from the ground. You start from ground zero. This is totally different. Bill's at the end, Robert's at the end, if you want to include that. And I don't mean the end, but, you know, there's windows there, too. And they've just spent $175 million guaranteed in free agency. And the greatest player in the history of the sport, you pushed out the door, and he won a championship in your face. And so I do not think this is the same thing. But if the rookie's better, they should still start him. But he's starting to win now. Like, that's... I'm not starting Mac Jones to develop him because I think you can develop on the bench. I do. I believe that. So I'm not doing that to get him reps. I'm doing it to win. I'm doing it because he's going to give me a better chance to win.
Yeah. Look, my question to you is like a case like Roethlisberger at all a precedent? And when I say a case like Roethlisberger, as a rookie, he started and they went 13-0 in his starts.
Yeah, that's a better, much better comp.
What were they the year before? Do you know?
Well, they were drafting 11 overall or something.
Yeah, right. So they were near the bottom.
But they were still, you know, they were just in the AFC title game against you in 2001. I think he was drafted in 04. So they were still a good team. That was still, you know, it's not like Pittsburgh had fallen off the map.
Right. They went 6-10 the year before. Yeah. The year they drafted him.
But the prior years, they had Tommy Maddox. They were making the playoffs. They weren't that bad. They had that one dip.
They had Cordell Stewart. They were, I mean, again, those guys sucked, but they were still winning. They were playoff teams. So, like that, this is more akin to Roethlisberger. It's a good one. Like, we're not playing you to develop you. We're playing you to win.
Yeah, and so my only question is, like, you know, is it what Roethlisberger did that year, though, was a wild aberration. It never happens that way with rookie quarterbacks, where they jump into a mediocre team. And he was the 11th pick, right? Jones was 15.
What happened with RG3?
Well, so I guess that's true. But he was number two, Murray, right? I mean, number two, and it did. It happened fast. But you almost, it's rare.
Yep.
It's rare.
The first question, that's an interesting one on Trent Frederick. The last time they played the Capitals, I think Frederick had a cold or something. He sat out the game because he was really the one that sparked the whole thing the time before when he got in Ovechkin's face. Yeah, and then Wilson had to, it drove Wilson nuts. And, you know, Frederick sort of lit the fuse on that whole thing the time before. And I wonder if the Bruins purposely sat Frederick out to sort of calm things down a little bit. What do you do in the playoffs? I'd put that kid out there.
Sure.
Yeah, I think you need him in a series like that. That's why he's here. It's why you drafted him.
I think he'll get his head kicked in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he might. Here's the Murray's update. We're back with another segment of your wonderful phone calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
Mike, you there?
Yeah, good. Hold on, I have a landline. This is my landline, yep.
Now, more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Would you have welcomed a return to New England?
I don't know. We never really got to cross that bridge. You never know where your path's going to take you in the NFL. I thought I was going to be in New England for my entire career. That didn't go as planned. So it's kind of one of those businesses. You just got to be ready for anything. Got to be on your toes. Got to be able to react. And, you know, however the story plays out, you just got to be able to run with it.
That was Jimmy Garoppolo with our friend Damon Amendolara. Jimmy Garoppolo did a media tour today. It was pre-scheduled. He scheduled it last week. We tried to get in on it, and we were shockingly rejected. But
exactly.
Jeez, I would have kissed his ass the whole time, too.
I don't know if he knows. He's got some friends here, but either way. If people think he, like, Garoppolo did this tour to go at the Niners, it's not, I don't think it really was it. I mean,
like a book or something him and his dad have coming out?
They're doing a charity event, right there, Jimmy?
Okay.
What was it?
Yeah, it's something to do with electrical workers.
So Jimmy and his dad, I don't know. It was pre-scheduled. So they were always planning to do it. Now, they were always planning to do it 2 days after the draft. So I don't know. But he did. He hasn't really said it. He's been supportive of Trey Lance and generally supportive of the situation and saying mostly the right thing. Nothing really you could sink your teeth into. But that was just sort of telling there. You know, would you have liked to return to New England? You know, usually when you're on a team that you want to be on, you say, No, I'm a Niner. I want to be here. We want to win here. And that he says, I don't know, which sort of tells you that's all he probably can say. Clearly, he would have welcomed a return to New England.
I mean, it sounds like things got pretty hot after Shanahan made that comment where, you know, I don't know who's going to be here on Sunday, right before the draft. And that one, apparently, based on what Bedard has said and other people have said, that one pissed off Garoppolo to the point where it's like, get me out of here, send me to New England.
Well, he was asked about that. Jimmy, if you could, how about, I think it's number four, if you could, please.
When Kyle Shanahan says, look, I can't guarantee who's my starting quarterback, I can't even guarantee who's alive on Sunday, that felt kind of dismissive to hear. But for you, did it bother you at all to hear that he couldn't even go so far as to guarantee that anybody's going to be alive on Sunday?
No. I know Kyle pretty well. I knew what he was trying to say when he said that. I don't know if he worded it the proper way, but I knew what he was trying to say. It definitely made for a good headline.
Okay, so, you know, Jimmy's not really touching it, but...
No, but even the line, I don't know if he worded it the right way.
Yeah.
Was like, I took that as he's a jackass. He said something he wasn't supposed to. And again, I told you, I'm of the belief that Garoppolo looks at Shanahan and says, like, dude, you handcuff me every time we go out there on Sunday. You don't let me throw.
Well, clearly there is, and this is, you know, not new. People have said this for a while. Good cop, bad cop thing. It's like every time Shanahan's opened his mouth, it's like a backhanded kind of snide or sly, you know, thing that would be against Garoppolo, where Lynch is sort of good cop. Listen to Jimmy Garoppolo on Lynch when he got the phone call from Lynch that they were going to move up and take a quarterback. Number one, Jimmy.
Did John Lynch call you to talk about drafting a quarterback, specifically Trey Lance?
Yeah, John called me. He didn't tell me who or, you know, how they were going to do it, but yeah, he gave me the heads up before. You know, John has been really cool throughout this whole process. As far as the GM goes, I mean, he's as straightforward and, you know, just as overall good person, and you really got to appreciate him for that. And just, you know, throughout the whole thing, it could have got a little fishy here and there, but he was very straightforward the whole time, and I appreciate him for that.
Okay, been really cool, a straightforward, overall good person. It's gotten fishy here along the way, but he's been great.
Yeah, and again, nothing like, you know, you don't hear him say anything like that about Shanahan. He clearly likes Lynch. And he doesn't like Shanahan. At least,
it's,
you know,
good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, as you said, good cop, bad cop. And look, Shanahan's his coach too, right? Mm-hmm. That's a guy he's dealing with on a more regular basis. He's more likely to be pissed off at him. But I think that that's where the clash is. It's with Garoppolo and Shanahan. And I think a lot of it stems from the fact that Shanahan, you know, binds his hands together and doesn't let him play on Sundays.
Shanahan hates him.
Yeah.
Right.
Feels that way. Like, it's just sort of obvious. Shanahan can't stand him. I don't know if Shanahan can stand any of his quarterbacks.
I agree.
You know, so anyway, all right, I have a couple emails to get to that I got to satisfy that sponsor on. So why don't we zip through these calls first, though. Okay, this is a mini lightning round. Let's see if you can play ball with me and be quick.
30 seconds, yes or no.
Pete in the car. Go ahead, Pete, on Ernie Adams. What do you think?
Yeah, hey, real quick. I just think once we clear through the post-draft analysis that if you do a deep dive on Ernie Adams' departure, it's going to be interesting. I think there's three people that's kind of interesting. I think with I think Belichick, the only guy that Belichick maybe thinks is smarter than him in the room is Ernie Adams. I think he thinks Saban's is equal, and I think he didn't respect anyone more than Scarnecchia. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see with Adams' departure and Scarnecchia's departure and all of the other early Belichick connections.
Yeah, Pete, thanks for the call. Ernie and Bill have been tied at the hip.
Big time.
For decades.
Yeah.
Decades. And I mean, there's people, I'm sure, in football who said, Bill's going to be without Ernie? Since when? That doesn't happen.
No, totally. And look, Bedard said he's heard things for a couple of years now about Ernie. And I would say, probably. I think that's how this sort of stuff happens. That as time goes on, people say, you know, Ernie's still there. He's in Bill's air. He, you know, the drafts are getting worse. People are leaving, and they've been building toward this. And finally, Ernie said, you know what? I'm going to get out. Like, I think that's how it doesn't happen overnight.
Rich and Quincy on the Bruins and the seventh player award. Go ahead, Rich.
I'm not going to dwell on the seventh player award, but before I share my Bruins comment, I've been listening to you guys for years. I've never called in, and I never envisioned that my first comment would be, I agree with you, Felger. So anyway, my point here is I want to focus on the next 2 months. It's time to change the narrative about the Bruins, okay? The thought that they can't win a physical series is ridiculous. You look at the back end now with Carlo, McAvoy, Clifton, Grizzlick, Riley, Luzon, Miller, if he's healthy, Zboril, Tenorti. I mean, that is a big back end.
Okay.
They're not going to get pushed around by anybody.
Yeah, Tenorti, if Tenorti's on the ice, you're in deep trouble, man.
He just mentioned Grizzly.
I know, Mike, I just gave you 10 players.
Okay, and you're right, I'm sorry, because I was looking at the list of seventh player award winners. Grizzly was on his list?
He mentioned Grizzly, Clifton, and who's the other one he mentioned that's not that big either? There was another one. Zboril. Like, I look at those guys and say, how are they going to win you a physical series, those guys?
Clifton's tough.
Yeah, but he's small.
But he's not big.
And I love the way he plays. He's tough, but Marchand's tough too. He hasn't produced in those series either. Like, let's not start to delude ourselves in terms of, you know, them trying versus them being able to execute it.
You saying they can win a physical series against a team that's big and tough is a projection. Maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. It hasn't happened.
Correct.
So, like, you're only basing it on what it looks like on paper, and you might be right. I hope you're right. You're going to need to be right. Because the Bruins are going to have to get past Washington, and then they're going to have to get past some bigger and tougher teams, especially if they face some Western Conference teams. Eddie in East Providence on the Bees. Hi, Eddie.
Yeah. Hi, Michael. Yeah. Hey, real quick. Wayne was right from Grafton. 70s guy is Wilson. He's tough. He knows it, and it's the NHL's worst nightmare.
Okay, but Eddie, the league has changed, right? It's not that league anymore.
I understand. And if they don't have like somebody like Wilson, somebody like Chara, Or Kevin Miller. You're going to be in trouble. You're going to have to take him on, or he knows he's going to run wild.
Okay, so the good news is, Eddie, thanks for the call, is that they faced this against the Blues a couple of years ago, and so they know. And have they fully addressed it? Or are they fully ready for it? We will find out. And that's what I think. That's coming your way eventually. You won't be able to avoid it forever.
They don't have a guy as tough as this guy.
No, well, who does? I mean, he's next level. But can they as a team stand up to it? You know, I don't need them to match the hitting. I need them to take the hitting.
Yeah, right.
That's the thing. And so if you can take the hit, that's fine. Let them try and drive you into the boards and you skate around them and because you're more skilled. Like, do that thing. Can you take it? Can you stand up to it? Pastrnak is top on my list. He has not been able to this point. He hasn't. He's cowered and turtled in the face of that and not scored and not produced. So that's what I'm looking for. Not to match it. You won't be able to match it. You're not big enough.
I think it's that whole first line.
Bucky in Charlestown. I think I just hit the wrong button. That's my fault. Eddie in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Eddie.
Yeah, I got a question. Do you think Cam Newton can fill the role of let's say, Taysom Hill of the New Orleans Saints?
Yep. Mm. So could he? Yes. Come in and run on third and three and suck throwing the ball? Yeah.
Just hand it off to a running back.
Oh, God, I hate the thought of that. New Orleans is the only team I've seen where that has worked. Only time. Only team I've ever seen that work.
And is it wrong to say Taysom Hill's a better athlete?
Yes.
And probably a better passer.
It's not wrong, but he's just better at this point.
He's more explosive.
He is more explosive.
I don't know the age difference. They got to be pretty close, though. Newton's a shell of himself. This is the problem. If you want to tell me it was Cam Newton from 7 years ago, we're talking about a guy in the prime of his career. Newton's the better athlete.
Not anymore. All the time they're going to spend in practice with repping the Cam plays that Mac Jones will never run.
So ridiculous.
All the game film of all the same stuff. Mac Jones is going to have less time to study anything that's relevant to him. How's this going to work? He shouldn't be here.
Let's do some emails, Jimmy.
Yeah.
It's the Moncast email of the day.
Dear Felga, I really hate you.
Yeah, I don't have knock on.
And I think Maz is a booby.
The Moncast email of the day. Send one to Felger at 985thesportshub.com. All right, email of the day is protected by Mimecast, M-I-M-E, M as in Mary, Mimecast. Safeguard your organization against phishing, business email compromise, and risks of ransomware. Visit Mimecast.com. Here's a good one. Subject line.
Seventh player award.
No, I got a bunch of those. we could do 4 hours on the seventh player if you wanted.
Anything thanks.
Anything on Bledsoe week one? Because I think we had that wrong.
Oh, did we? He didn't start week one?
Apparently not. It was Scott Seacules.
I was going to say Scott Seacules.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Did he start week two?
He had to.
Bledsoe played 13 games, started 12, didn't start week one of his rookie year from a few people that have sent me. Like,
wow, I don't remember that.
Sorry. Got that wrong. I thought he started week one.
Me too.
All right, well. Okay, that's... Let's just chalk that one up. There's another one for you. We suck. This one's subject line, dick. All bold.
Yeah. All caps.
Yep. Nope. And it's not from Richard. It's from Peter.
But it's an acronym.
Subject line, dick. You're ridiculous. Keep reaching for the crazy, Felger. Take a leave and join the Trump reelection campaign, why don't you? We can't drive in the pragmatic, reasonable lane. We have to follow you down crazy conspiracy lane. Makes for good radio. ... I guess. Greg Bedard, voice of reason. Signed, Peter. Okay, I mean,
Peter.
We tend to do the conspiracy thing because sometimes it's not always what it seems. We tried to tell you that there were big problems between Brady and Belichick, and there were big fissures in there, and there was big issues with the owner and the coach and the quarterback, and it was all going to come to a head, and we told you Seth Wickersham was right, and that one, we weren't on crazy lane there, were we?
And that's all I heard. We all heard for month after month. You guys are making it all up. That's why Tom Brady won his most recent Super Bowl as a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
As it turns out, we only made up about half of it.
it seems like we were in the straight talk express lane on that one, Peter. Finally, I'll just give you this one.
Speaking of Peter, how about Pete Peters when he won the seventh?
He did. Player. Pete Peters is on this list. Pete Peters won in 82-83. He won the seventh player.
Yeah, and he was the goalie for the Flyers on that unbeaten
season. Listen, okay. All right. You know what? This will be the final word here. Final my word right here for the Bruins hardcores out there. All you and your Andy Moog jerseys in Saugus, listen up. You're going to grease up over this one. This is going to be a trip down memory lane.
Oh, God.
Seventh player award winners after Pete Peters in 82-83. Did you know Mike O'Connell?
Oh, I bet.
Won the seventh player award? He sucked. That's why he won it.
I'm telling you, every hack has won it at some point because they had one good year.
Randy Burridge?
I think a few times, if I remember correctly.
Cam Neely did win it.
Yep.
Yeah, Glenn Wesley. Burridge again. Very good. John Cotta, who we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, Cotta.
Ken Hodge. Not the old junior man. Yeah, junior. Vladdy Ruzicka.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Rosie.
Yeah. Don Sweeney won it. In 94-95, Blaine Locker won it.
Oh, Let him in.
Then Kyle McLaren, Ted Donato, Heavy D.
Yeah.
Then Jason Allison, Byron Defoe, Joe Thornton. Like, that's when the...
These seventh, are the dark ages.
Well, but the seventh player loses its integrity there. You don't give it to the number one overall pick. Like, that's not... It's someone who exceeds expectations. If Joe Thornton had a good year, he was supposed to.
Yeah, it tells you how bad they were.
And he won it in 99-2000, which is like... That was 3 years into his career. He's not, okay, so like wrong. No, you got that one wrong, Bruins fans.
Yeah, but he blossomed, Felga.
Bill Guerin twice. Like again, no. Mike Knubel. Yup.
Knubel. Wow.
Andrew Raycroft. Tim Thomas twice. Lucic. Krejci. Rask. Marchand. Sagan. Like again.
You can't give it to stars.
The number two overall pick doesn't get the seventh player.
Marchand was a good one though, because back then he was a runt.
Marchmont. Dougie Hamilton, again, same principle, not the guy. Riley
losing its integrity.
Riley Smith won it. Pasternak won it. Marchand again. Pasternak, wrong. McAvoy, wrong. 2 years ago, Chris Wagner. That's the seventh player.
I love Wags.
Okay.
Talk about a Boston guy. He's a Boston guy through and through.
Who won the seventh player last year? Charlie Coyle, you would never know it.
Oh, yeah, he had a good year.
Maybe it has lost its luster. Anyway, there's that. Year. Final word comes your way next.
Boston's home for sports. Failure.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio, crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, there's only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody. No one.
Quickly, before we get to the 10 questions, recap with Greg Bedard of the Sports Journal.
Yeah, it's a recap, all right.
A correction to the correction in the prior segment. Drew Bledsoe did start week one in Buffalo in 1993 as a rookie. This is proof again why I should always check Pro Football Reference and ignore the dumb emails and tweets.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I thought I was taking crazy pills too. I was like, wait a minute. No, I thought I remembered this, and he did.
And then did he get banged up and miss a couple games? Is that what happened?
Maybe that's what happened. But
he was inactive for like three games that year.
Okay, but I thought he was.
He
the
started
week
one against Buffalo.
Yeah, thank you. I thought so too.
Okay. All right. Now to the recap. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Called his 53 points fake.
It was fake. I agree, fake.
That wasn't even a win.
That's a loss.
Asterisk.
Phony.
Hologram.
No.
Number 10, Greg. Who do you blame for the Aaron Rodgers situation?
Mark Murphy.
Wrong answer, Greg. Every time you give an answer I don't like, what I have here is a box of Dunkin' Munchkins. Okay? I'm going to take one of these Munchkins, and I'm going to throw it at you, Greg. That's what we're going to do.
Number 9, Greg, what should the Packers do?
Trade him now.
Trade his ass. Tool bag question. Who was the biggest tool bag of the NFL draft?
Kyle Shanahan. I thought he was a complete jackass.
Okay, same. We circled back to this, but either way, do you believe the Niners, because they're putting out there now, that they wanted Trey Lance all along? Do you believe them?
Absolutely not.
Wrong answer, Greg. Kyle Shanahan. I thought he was a complete jackass.
Defensive players in general, across the board, have been de-emphasized. I don't know how many got picked in the first round, those numbers keep going down. Greg, is this a good or a bad thing for the sport of football and the NFL?
Well, I don't think it's either.
Wrong answer, Greg.
Throw the munchkin.
Yeah, this is actually a bagel bite, Murray. I got a bagel bite here for you. Big mistake, Greg. Big mistake.
Early Super Bowl prediction, big boy.
Rematch, Chiefs, Bucks.
Brady's the man, the Bucks are the team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Cleveland Browns. Bucks, Browns.
Wrong answer, Greg. Kyle Shanahan. I thought he was a complete jackass.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.